The case is the only opportunity for people to achieve justice through equality of arms and parity of esteem. We've put together world-renowned experts. We've 9 people working on our legal team on this case. We've access to specialist counsel for European law, planning law. It's free for everybody to join. They don't have a cost risk. They did initially. Excuse me. They did initially, but there is no cost risk now. So there's no downside, really. It's a unique and groundbreaking case, Greg. As you know, it's private. It's fully funded on a not-for-profit basis. And private in the sense that only those in the case are entitled to benefit from the results of the case in the first instance. And at some point, we will close off. We've just crossed 1,800 in the case now. And our view has always been that 2,000 is a good number. And having had discussion with MAG, and we're very thankful and grateful for their support, we have decided that what we will do is we will then announce a sort of cut-off period so that people who haven't joined still have the opportunity to do so. But we're coming to the time when, unfortunately, because our resources are finite, it will have to close.
You mentioned how there's no risk now. This is in terms of people finding themselves, you know, having to cover costs or what have you. This is off the back of a recent ruling, is it? Can you just give us, firstly, what was said and the significance of that and maybe the context of the case?
Well, it's a unique event in Irish law, what happened. And it's this, that if ever a citizen or a person in Donegal wishes to take a high court case and they lose, they are responsible for the costs of the winner, the loser pays principle. However, in this instance, it was agreed between the defendants, the NSAI, Cassidy's and DCC, Donegal County Council, that in fact they would not have to incur any costs in putting in an appearance to each claim, and we wouldn't pursue judgment absent the appearance of each claim. So that agreement is holding in the main. And what that means for people is that they have no downside risk on an adverse costs order against them, which is a huge weight off people's shoulders. It's been tough enough, Greg, without the legal bills that may or may not happen. They will not happen. That's the message.
Now, some people were saying, yes, but this doesn't include everyone because I didn't get my blocks from a particular supplier or I'm living in Derry or Tyrone or whatever it might be. So is there anyone that doesn't qualify to join this action?
Yeah, there are, Greg, in one sense and in another not, and I'll explain. The case is against, as a block supplier, it's against Cassidy's. And there are other firms out there supplying blocks. And we do have some people who are complaining about the quality of the blocks from these places. And we're not quite sure whether there was an element of what we call white labelling going on, that in fact the quarries themselves have no problems with their blocks, but that they may, in a short-term arrangement, have asked Cassidy's to supply blocks for a particular customer.
I think I can say with a degree of certainty that that did certainly happen place.
Therefore, is it viable to start taking individual cases against individual quarries when this could well turn out to be the case? So what we believe people should do is that they should reach out again, because our knowledge is increasing all the time in this area, and that if they have had blocks from another supplier and those blocks are affected, they're faulty in some way, we will look at it again. And we don't want to leave people behind. That's not the purpose of the case.
But can they join now? And second to that, too, there is a group of individuals who maybe purchased a property or don't have any evidence as to where the blocks came from. You know, they didn't hold on to a receipt or what have you. And I'm not trying to pick holes, but it is the sort of individual cases that might be more inclined to message in as we have this conversation. So just in regards to not being able to prove where you got your blocks from or you have no evidence of that, where does that leave you in this case?
We've no trouble with answering that or dealing with it. And the reason is this, that it's great when people do have receipts. But honestly, when you're building your house and you're 20 years on, to think that you kept your block receipts, Greg, is a stretch. That's number one. But number two, and more importantly, the geological makeup of each block is unique to the area from which the stone was drawn. Mm. So we can show immediately, even sometimes by looking at the, at it, that if this is a Cassidy's block.
Now, how is it progressing? And when I know from my last conversation with you that actually it is moving perhaps slightly quicker than one might have imagined, but this is a process that has to be gotten through and the wheels of justice can turn quite slowly.
Well, no, you're absolutely right, Greg. I'm happy to tell you that there is a timetable agreed as between all defendants. And we are rigidly sticking to that timetable, as indeed are most of the defendants. And the great thing about that is that it's now incumbent upon all defendants to lodge their defence to the claim now. They have about 6 weeks within which to do it. And that really is that this is a turning point in the case, because we've had to set our case out. We spent a year and a half preparing it and we're quite satisfied with what we're saying and what we're doing. It's incumbent on the defendants now to reach out and say how they intend to defend this case. And I just, if I could pause there for a moment, Greg, because, you know, one has to ask, why is Dave Coleman on the radio? Why are we here? And this isn't a fight with the government, Greg. This is a search for justice for all. And governments will come and go, as you know, but the problems in Donegal are only going to grow. Both the state, through the NSAI and Donegal County Council, and the people of Donegal are destined to have an epic clash in the courts in Ireland, of which it's certain there will be no winners. The people, we believe, will get what they're entitled to. That's not a victory. That's just getting what you're entitled to. And the state, they'll have to watch as years of regulation and are publicly paraded throughout Europe and beyond. Like the listeners not involved in this case, who have no skin in the game, they do not wish to see Ireland Inc. thrown under a bus like this, because people are taking sides. There are no sides here. We want to be very, very clear that the ideal outcome is that jaw-jaw here is better than war, and people should talk.
Do you think that this is being taken, we'll just use the government for an example, or the state, or however it's phrased, is this being taken seriously to the point whereby they could be brought to the table at some point?
The way we're running the case, Greg, is unfortunately to fight it. And no lawyer should ever take a case unless he's willing to have a judge give an opinion on the rights and wrongs of it. And we are doing this, and we will continue to do it. And the state know we're heavily funded, and that they know we have the right experts, and they know that we're heading for a clash. And I'm not calling out the state to say that they're wrong, but what I am saying is that they should be negotiating. There was previous negotiations with civilians without legal or technical representation, which led to a government and, dare I say, a civil service-led grant scheme, not a redress scheme. It's a completely different thing. Redress applies to everybody. Grant is who qualifies and who is told qualifies. It's a whole different ballgame. And we're not trying to, I suppose, you know, try to win this on the airwaves. But it's a clear clarion call for logic to prevail here, rather than we all have a go at one another on the floor of the High Court.
Well, it is fascinating because I have no legal background whatsoever, but it would be fascinating to see how, on behalf of the government, a defence is put forward and on what grounds, and because you have to be very careful, I presume, how they position themselves because of who we're talking about and the potential consequences or the ramifications or admittance in certain areas or whatever it might be.
Well, that's just it. I mean, we've looked at it from the other side, Brett, as to what are they going to tell us. We fairly know what they're going to write in their defence, and you know, it is sort of betting the house on this defence, because if they're wrong here, they're wrong in so many other aspects of their relationship with their citizens. And it's a defining moment for citizens and the relationship of government and regulation and who's entitled to what level of care.
Because we were told, I mean, you know, we were told at the time of the first scheme that I want to say we. I just use that as a term. That, you know, you better accept this. You really need to accept this, because if you don't, we're going to have to change legislation. And if we change legislation, that's going to take 5 or 6 years. That was the public defence for not giving 100% redress. Now, I presume no one's going to stand up in a court of law and say that, but it'd be very interesting to find out how you would defend that position. Now, I'm not saying even that might come up in this, but do you know what I mean? That's what people were being told. They were saying, if you don't take this, you might not get anything.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it comes down to the two things, equality of arms and parity of esteem. You know, when somebody's telling you, you get a grant if you qualify, and if you don't like it, you're not getting it. That's not equality of arms. That's not parity of esteem. This case is both. We can match them toe for toe on any of the legal or technical expertise that's required here. And it's a different ballgame. Now, we don't want to win. We want to have a proper system of justice and put in place here with redress for all. And that's not a win. Because if you have winners and losers, Greg, it's more difficult to deal with something. Like, we have to engage maturely and objectively. And we need to put the past behind us.
Question marks have been raised and have been sent in to us here again about the legality of third-party funding and contingency fees in Ireland. Could you address that for us?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's a bit of an old trope at this point, Greg, where millions spent down the road. The state are engaging with us in a very, very objective and reasonable way. For example, the Dropbox for appearances, saving people money and risk. So, you know, if they had something to say to us about legal funding, they would have said it. That's the first thing. The second thing is that well before we embarked on this action, we took our own views in relation to the type of funding we were doing and what's allowed by law in Ireland. And, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And that we have had no issues. Nobody's raised it once. And we firmly believe that nobody is going to raise the funding here because it's not for profit. It's for the public good. The courts we've been in now, let's say, 15 times into court already, and the judge has not been appraised of any issues, and this is not going to arise in this case.
And you would imagine it would have been suggested at this point to put an early end to the whole thing if it were if the defendants thought there was
if they thought they could, Greg, they would, and they know they can't and won't.
Yeah. If your house this listener can't afford to test their house, but you know yourself that I think they've come to the conclusion that they must have a MICA. Can they sign up with Coleman Legal even if they haven't had a test done yet?
Oh, 100%. If you have a fear that your house is contaminated, sign up. You're not going to be forced at your own expense to get a test done. There's going to be a system in place if we win, and we believe we will, or if we settle, and we believe we will, that you know, that it's taken out of your hands. It's impossible to ask an ordinary citizen who may have given his life, paying his taxes, doing his job, to become now a building contractor and to ensure his house is built to a certain standard. There has to be a proper system in place. It's not there, Greg. It's not even slightly there.
A caller says, when you send in your form to the County Council for defective blocks now, you have to state whether you are on with Dave Coleman or another representative, and state that you won't accept any additional money apart from what the government gives you. Is this correct? Have you?
No. That's either a misinterpretation by the council or by the caller. Of course, nobody's entitled to double compensation, and we were very clear about that when the legislation
was. This is the shortfall we're talking of, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. We're only claiming for the shortfall. So if the grant is given, the grant is subtracted from any redress scheme that's available.
And this is a question I was very keen to get an answer to yesterday, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to ask you today. Would the beer, if successful, would there be a retrospective element to this? Because if there were not, I can see people not wanting to necessarily progress in this scheme until such time as there is an agreement or a ruling. So do you expect that someone who maybe has had to dig into their savings or to borrow, say, for an additional 40,000, 50,000 euro, and they're currently paying that back now, if you're successful in this action, would they be compensated retrospectively, do you think?
Well, let's say, for example, a homeowner had to replace their outer leaf, Greg, because clearly that was the damage. And the wisdom at the time was replace the outer leaf and it'll be fine. Of course, we'll be claiming for the outer leaf. And that one of our lead cases, the O'Doherty case, is just that. It's an outer leaf and a problem and a defective block case. So, of course, we're looking for all out-of-pocket expenses. And there are many elements to that, including, you know, the house rental, the storage costs, the general damages for what people have to go through. I mean, their houses are destroyed. Their lives have to be rebuilt in some ways.
Yes, this could end up, if successful, far more expensive for the government, for an example, than a actual 100% redress scheme, because this would catch more stuff than perhaps a broadly welcomed 100% redress scheme might.
I know you might feel I'm splitting a hair, Greg, but it's not 100% redress. Well, it's 100% grant.
No, but it's not Mica either. You know what I mean. Yeah, I get you.
Oh, no, 100%. I do know what you mean, Greg. But, you know, even in the Dáil, they call it a redress scheme and they know, well, it's a grant scheme and it applies to few. So, you know, it has to change and it will change, or we'll have to go to Europe to change it.
All right, language is important, though, so I appreciate the clarification. Right. No, you're perfectly right. I'm not precious. I like to be able to use the right words going forward. Negligence by surveyor regarding Mica house was bought a few years ago. Surveyor said there was no deleterious material. Is there a timeline to take a case? Does the two homeowners have to consent to such a case? I think this is not part of the action that you're taking. Sorry, I read that believing it were. But do you have any advice for them just whilst I do,
Greg, yeah. In fact, we are suing some surveyors in sidebar actions and other professionals for their efforts or lack of effort in relation to advice given to homeowners. I mean, it's tough enough for people to have the problem that they do. But when they rely on professionals who give them poor advice, of course they have rights. Now, they would want to be careful of the time, Greg. You have 6 years from the date of, discovery of the problem. And if you're a second-hand homeowner, it's more complex then if the first damage was done, you know, by the previous owner, if you know what I mean, or their advisors. So each case has to be seen on its merits. But most certainly, they should be doing something about that.
Okay, just another couple of more questions, then I won't hold you very much longer. What rights do council tenants have where the house has severe issues with defective blocks and the council? Are all correspondents, but anyway, but just up to that point, where do people in social housing fall into this?
Well, the Housing Act of 1966 says that the local authority has to provide an accommodation that is safe and fit for human habitation. Once the property falls below that benchmark, the onus is on the council then to rehouse, repair, or make good whatever the issues are. So that, yes, people do have rights. They're not sitting ducks or as sitting tenants, not at all.
All right. Can you ask Mr. Coleman, we're selling our house and had to get it tested. It came back 17% mica, but we can't get on any scheme as there's no actual damage to the property. That's an awful catch-22 there, it seems.
Yes, there's a lot of that. What they ought to do is, they have a test, which says 17%. But they should sign up for the case because every person has a duty to mitigate their loss. And the only way you can do it is if you assert your rights. And the only way you can assert your rights is if you join the case. And it is a very tough bind because people generally selling, Greg, need to sell.
Yeah, and they're an awful situation there. And very finally, I recently bought a house. I was living abroad and we were returning home to live and bought it online via an estate agent. Neighbours now tell us the estate has mica. Some houses are in worse conditions than others. I bought it 3 months ago. What can I do?
Make contact.
With Global Legal. Okay.
When you think of it, Greg, 3 months ago, 120 days ago, how long have you been talking about this on your show?
Yeah.
That's appalling. Yeah, you make contact.
Okay. Dave, thanks very much for your time today. I think we covered everything. And I think really that the parting message is here that there has to be a cap at some point and you're really sort of down to the last 10%. So if there are people, and it's a broad net that you're casting, really, as we heard from some responses to those questions coming in. If people want to be part of this, they would really need to get in contact now. So how do they do so, Dave?
Defectiveblocks at colemanlegal.ie, or just contact the firm ourselves. And we have a call centre available to people. It works very, very well. It's a user-friendly service. So, yeah, people are welcome.
Thanks for your time, Dave. That's Dave Coleman, founder and managing partner with Coleman Legal.